And I got a little bit of reorganization here, so it's possible I could screw this up, but then we can fix it later. Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm joined by two guests today, Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner and Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. They've both appeared on the program in the past, but this is the first time they've been here together. Our conversation will extend into next week in a two-part series. Mayor Miner, County Executive Mahoney, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I hadn't planned on asking a question about Albany today, but we're speaking on the day that the New York Times published its long investigative report on the extent to which Governor Cuomo's office involved itself, even apparently obstructed the work of the Moreland Commission. County Executive Mahoney, you were a member of that commission. I've already asked you a few specific questions about this report, which previously aired as a news story on WRVO. But I just have one general question for the two of you that comes out of this. And Mayor Miner, I'll start with you on this. But do either of you think that there has been significant reform of the political system in Albany over the past 3 years? And if so, what is it?
I guess that's kind of like, when did you stop beating your wife? As long as there are politicians who we see dragged out in handcuffs from their offices in Albany, the answer is no, there hasn't been. What is troubling for me is that this makes it hard for all of us elected officials to do our job. And part of being an elected official is telling people things that they don't want to hear. And when they have in their mindset that there are other politicians who are lying or not being honest or are under the veil of corruption, it makes it much more difficult for all of us to do our job in a time where it's very difficult to be an elected official these days.
County Executive Mahoney, again, this report sort of prompted me to think of this bigger question of what have the last 3 years produced in terms of reform.
Well, I would agree with the mayor that the whole issue makes it very difficult for us to work in this world because there's an incredible amount of cynicism surrounding politics. But I think that's gone on for a long time. When I was asked to participate in this Moreland Commission, one of the first things that I said as a commission member inside our meetings was, we need to change the rules, the policies. You can spend the next year going and looking at individual donors or individual elected officials that have gotten in trouble and maybe even have wild success and get rid of all of the troublemakers. But that vacuum is very quickly going to be filled with more troublemakers if you don't change the policies. And I'll just give you one example of what we're talking about. When the Moreland Commission was formed, it was news at the time that there had been a state senator who was alleged to have paid off a political committee for the ability to get his name on the ballot. The policy that we have, this Wilson-Pakula rule, the fact that one person, by virtue of their role as a political party chair, having that kind of power sets the groundwork. You have the fertile ground for that kind of thing to happen, where somebody can make a significant donation to the party and in exchange can get their name on a ballot. We should change the rules. You should not have any part of our political process open to that kind of fraud. And those were the kind of things that I was hoping would come from the Moreland Commission. I think we spent a lot more time talking about individual investigations and not about changing the big policies. There was some progress that was made. There's certainly more that can be made. But I think anybody who rolls up their sleeves and tries to take this on should be focusing not on the individuals, but on the policies that make the fraud possible.
And what I wanted to do then with the rest of the program here in the first part is to focus our conversation for the most part on specific issues that relate to Syracuse. And that may spill over a little bit into next week. But when there, we will look more at sort of broader questions about leadership. So that's where we're going with this. So let me start with a big local issue, I-81. And, of course, we could do an entire program on that. But I do have a few questions for the two of you on this. and this is a mouthful of a wind-up to my question, but it does seem to me that there's a contradiction in the process on this, that on the one hand, everyone agrees that this is a huge decision for this area and its future. On the other hand, the making of the decision, at least to me, remains a bit murky, particularly regarding how, to what extent, and which views from the public, elected officials like yourselves, business stakeholders matter, and when in the process these views matter. So, Mayor Miner, let me start with you. In a nutshell, how is this decision going to be made in the end?
Well, I think it's going to be made like all decisions in democracies are made. It's going to be murky and it's going to be messy. And everyone's going to be asked to have input from federal officials to state officials to local officials to neighborhoods and constituency groups. And that's why we've had a process where the county executive and I have had meetings where we brought in experts and speakers to talk about this, because ultimately everybody has a stake in this decision. And that's why when you say it's murky, it has to be murky, because everybody has to have input in it. And the goal is to have consensus at the end that we as a community can move forward with a transformational opportunity for our economy, for our community, for Central New York as a whole.
But County Executive, who ultimately says, okay, and the final analysis is going to be this and not this? Is that the state?
I think ultimately it's the state, because that's where the funding is coming from. The view that I have taken on 81 is there's like three components. And I think the most important one is I want the public to know that I don't think, just by virtue of the fact that I happen to be sitting in this chair at this moment in time, that I should be, you know, putting my will forward. I have been a lot more focused and committed to the process. When we first started, it was very much unclear, the kind of questions you just had. Who's in charge? What is being considered? How is it being considered? When is something going to happen? And in cooperation with the mayor and with the state DOT commissioner, we have tried to open that up. And to that end, I've donated county space so that all the scoping materials can be available. The public can come in and have those questions answered. What are you looking at? What is the scope of this project? What is being considered? And then the second part, in addition to protecting the process, and as the mayor said, we've brought speakers in, and I've been influenced by some of the speakers that we've heard. There was a woman who was the project manager on the Big Dig in Boston, which everybody has a perception was an abysmal failure because it was so late and so expensive. But her point was, well, how do you measure success? Look at Boston today. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at things with a longer range view, there was some success certainly that came from the Big Dig. But this, the second part of it is, I've asked that we not limit ourselves to cost being the driving factor until you give the mayor and me the opportunity to see if we can get our federal partners or our local constituents input on whether there's a willingness to pay for something better than we're going to get if we make the decision solely based on cost. So I'm saying, as your county executive, I'm protecting the process. I'm trying to open that process up. And when we reach some consensus, I will do what I can to get the community's will. And, you know, if the federal government says there is no money and the local constituents say we don't want to see any kind of fee increases and we're left with a decision based solely on cost, at least we've given it our best shot. So, you know, I haven't come out and said this is what I want. I certainly have a personal opinion, but I'm more interested in the process being protected and that, you know, there's some opportunity to lead the way.
And if I could just kind of add to that, you know, the process is dictated by the law, this NEPA process, and we have expanded it to include speakers, to give people an opportunity. And not to be too nuanced about it, but when you say who's going to ultimately make the decision, the state is. My point is, the state is us. We elect our representatives. They're answerable to us. The same as the federal government is going to have input on it, too, because if the Highway Trust Fund gets money in it eventually, which I think it will, that's also going to play a part in funding it. And those representatives are also, we vote and elect them. So it's all of us. Now, if we were to be silent about it and a decision gets made in a vacuum, could it be made in a back room in Albany someplace with nobody's input? Of course it could. But that's not going to happen as long as we're all paying attention to it and understanding the kind of importance that this decision has in our future.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney and Syracuse City Mayor Stephanie Miner. Let me pursue that just for a minute. So you have said, at least so far in terms of your preferences, what you don't want to see, which is a rebuild of the elevated highway. And County Executive, you just elaborated on why you haven't really said specifically what you like or don't like, although you have a personal opinion. So on this question then of how this decision gets made, there are a lot of elected officials now who have come forward and said they like this particular idea, and they've sort of gathered quite a number of them together behind it. I guess I'm sort of fast-forwarding to when the decision gets made. If it does become the case that there is a fairly large consensus of elected officials in this area that want option B, is it conceivable to think that the state's going to come back after all that and say, no, you're going to get C?
That could always happen, sure. But then there will be the political system will exercise itself, and you will see upheaval. And in terms of what we've seen certain elected officials say and do, I've talked to all of them. I talk to them regularly. I don't think any of them has a commitment written in stone. And what they've said, I think, is a variation on what I've said and what the county executive has said too, which is, let's look at all the ideas. Where they have kind of said is, I want to make sure we look at this one, too, and I want to make sure that we have this on the table. And as what I've said is, I agree, but I know from my goals, which are to, you know, have some greater transformational economic development and community benefit, knit the city together, in particular University Hill and the economic energy along with a burgeoning downtown, that an elevated viaduct that's even bigger than the one we currently have doesn't meet those goals.
Is there, County Executive, is there any thought in your office or between the two of you, that when we get a little further down the road, but the road is quickly traveling, that there will be some effort to more systematically canvass the views of the community about what it is that they want? I mean, there have been these public hearings, but they're not terribly systematic in the way that they're going about figuring this out. So somewhere systematic, I don't know if it's a poll, if it's a kind of a vote, maybe a representative body comes together and engages in a public deliberation, but some kind of way to sort of figure out where people are on this?
Yes, and we have put a website together encouraging people to give us their thoughts, and we do have a lot of that, and it is being compiled and passed along to the State Department of Transportation. The fact is, I think there's consensus that if we could go back in time, we wouldn't build the 81 that was built, because we've seen the effect of that. But at this moment in time, it's, you know, you have to look at the situation as it exists currently, and then what are the pros and cons of the different alternatives that are being explored. When you look, as you can from my office on the 14th floor of the Civic Center, down on 81, and you realize that some of the most valuable real estate in the city of Syracuse is two blocks away from some of the least valuable real estate in the city of Syracuse, you can certainly make an argument that there's a better way. But I'm hoping that as this conversation continues, and I will do my part, and you're doing it here on this program, encourage people to go to the county website. We can direct your comments back to the state DOT. I'm certainly happy to share those with the mayor. But right now, it's mostly special interests.
Although I can tell you from the city perspective that, you know, when you have public meetings at 7 o'clock on a summer night and you're getting 50 to 60 to 70 people to show up, that's amazing. And the space that the county has opened up for people to go in and look at it. So there are plenty of opportunities. And from whether you're looking at the editorial pages or discussions that people are having to this show, in and of itself, it shows that people are conscious of it. They're talking about it. This decision is not being made in a vacuum. And so I think the next part of the process is to say, okay, well, what are the costs and benefits? And how do we, you know, how do we put those in a way that makes sense to everybody so we can all kind of figure out, is there a consensus option?
I want to stick with the I-81 topic here for just a little bit longer. And I have a question here based on my experience as a driver dealing with road construction projects in this area. I wanted to ask the two of you, whoever wants to take this, about the disruptions to travel and also really, more seriously, our local economic productivity during this time period that's going to be caused by whatever project is chosen while it's being built. That seems to me to be getting less attention than it might, even though it does get talked about. I guess the question is this. Is there any understanding at this point that the construction of this thing is going to be done in some kind of expedited manner, even if that raises the cost of it?
Well, I think it's actually kind of just the opposite, that some of these options that are being discussed, they say take 8 years. And that's when they're saying right now 8 years, which in my experience is those goals are never hit.
Yeah, make it 12.
Right. And so look, and they are talking about that. And that's all part of this process of where we are right now, which is saying, okay, for example, if you want to do option A, these are the lands that you're going to require undertakings. And then it's going to cost so many millions or billions of dollars. And then it's going to cost this much in terms of number of years of construction. Those are all costs. Some of them are easily, you know, you can put a dollar sign next to them, and others you can put an aggravation sign next to them. But that's part of the reality and part of what everybody's talking about, too. And as we narrow these options down and get really down into the granular level of what they would mean to this community in terms of costs, in terms of changing lifestyles, and in terms of the, you know, the whole upheaval to people's traveling lives, yeah, those are things that you're going to see those talked about.
Because there are road projects that I have seen in places where they're working on them 24/7. And they're out there with the lights at night, and you know, they're getting it done fast.
And I actually think some of the bridge projects that have happened, and some of them have happened in the city of Syracuse over 81, have been remarkably quick because of the new technology and building the decking and then coming in one piece. So I think people are aware of that. This is a tremendous opportunity right now, though, and people should stop and think about the ramifications of the different alternatives. And then if we start to coalesce around one, what happens to the surface streets, you know, to mitigate any kind of traffic impact? But I don't want to make, you know, a decision that's going to last 50 or 100 years, you know, based on don't want to be hassled on, you know.
Grant Rear doesn't want to have an extra 6 minutes of travel time.
I'll pick the one that's done the fastest.
It's going to be really expensive. The mayor and I were together on the city council when we heard that over and over and over again about why we needed to build sewage treatment plants in the city of Syracuse. It was going to be cheaper. Mm-hmm. And we railed against it and we won. And I don't want to fall into that trap. It's not as if money is no object. But this is something that's going to outlive Grant, Stephanie, and Joni, and let's make this decision with the information, you know, and a better, bigger way than I think we sometimes tend to do as government officials.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guests are Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner and Onondaga County Executive Joni Mahoney. One last question on this. I've been living here for a little over 20 years. The two of you have grown up in the area, spent your whole lives here. It seems to me that throughout the time that I have been here, there's been an ongoing conversation in this community about where Syracuse is and where it's going, much more so than in other places that I've lived. Does the I-81 issue tap into that broader conversation and hit nerves in it, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. From my perspective, it does. Look, it's a transportation decision that when you look at what other communities in the United States are doing and other communities in the world are doing, they're looking at transportation in a more holistic way and thinking about neighborhoods and pedestrians and communities and how economics function. And to kind of tap into the last question, I think we in upstate New York and Syracuse in particular have a history of accepting second best for ourselves. And we see that sort of manifested in cynicism and people always kind of questioning where are we going and are we doing better than we should be doing or have been doing. And this is an option for us to say we won't accept second best for ourselves because it's too expensive, or we won't accept second best for ourselves because it may, you know, add 3 minutes of travel time to some people. What we're going to do is make sure that we make the best decision for the community, it's the city of Syracuse, Onondaga County, and Central New York, that's going to put us in a competitive place.
And I would just add real quickly to that. We had one speaker who came here who said that in a community-wide debate like the one we're having in 81, as the years went by, the federal and state government made repairs to the road, and after several years realized the road is actually fine right now and we don't need to do anything, and they packed up and kind of went on their way. That's something that I don't want to have happen, and I would say we're in danger of, because of that question about what is Syracuse and where is Syracuse going, and as the mayor just said, sometimes willing to take second best. What an opportunity will be missed if we let the negativity and, you know, some of that stuff that we complain about drag us down to the point where the decision gets made by default and we end up, you know, not participating.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to put back to you, because you have not put forward, and as you said, an opinion on this. But I do wonder on this point then whether rebuilding the viaduct isn't in a way kind of a give up on that question, because you're just sort of doing what you did before, right?
Well, I've seen some conceptual drawings about rebuilding the viaduct, and, you know, I don't have enough information to say this can work or that can't work, but there have been these conceptual drawings that say if you're going to rebuild the viaduct, raise it and make the barrier go away so that it's not right there at that level. And look at some of these, you know, very high bridges that are around the world. And you know, if you're going to rebuild it, are you going to rebuild it in a better way? I don't think rebuilding it is necessarily a failure. What's going to be a failure is if you put up with construction hassle for the next 20 years while it gets built little by little by little, and then the decision's been made and we have exactly what we started with.
All right. Let me shift to another topic now at the time we have left. Downtown hotels, the last and possibly the final installment in the effort to bring back the Hotel Syracuse downtown is getting underway. Mm-hmm. Ed Reilly has purchased it and is beginning what will be another long and complicated process that, if it works, will, according to him, have to involve the ongoing financial support of city and county government. Now, I had the developer Mike Falcone on the program recently, and on this question of Syracuse's overall hotel needs, he didn't seem to place a distinct importance on a downtown hotel beyond the impact that it has on the convention center. So I guess my first question is, how important is having a hotel like the Hotel Syracuse downtown?
Well, I don't think of it from that construct. Okay. The Hotel Syracuse is downtown. It's an architectural landmark. It anchors the southern end of our downtown, and it needs to be renovated and viable for us to have a fully functional downtown, which then leads to a fully functional city and community. It's an integral piece to our overall community and economic development.
And so would the two of you be inclined to support Reilly on loans or tax credits? And if so, are there particular instruments that
I think people might be surprised to find out how much Stephanie and I have worked together on this. Okay. This has been a joint effort between the city and the county, to the point where every Monday morning, Stephanie's economic development director meets with the deputy county executive and Ed Reilly, and they have shepherded this through, and we've made commitments to the project. The county has redirected the state funding that we received for a convention center hotel. The city agreed to take it by eminent domain. This has been a real hand in glove. We know what he's going to need, and we're committed to his success.
Yeah, absolutely. And to Joni's point, I think Ed would be the first to say that he wouldn't be in this position had it not been for the city and county working closely to support him and help move this project along.
So it doesn't sound like then that one would anticipate any big conflicts on this one then in terms of the
support and the financing. I think the only conflict you would see is if something was wildly underestimated and and more commitment needed to be made. But right now there's a big commitment from the public in this project that Ed says is enough to get it across the finish line.
And move to economic development more generally. Question here, there was a recent report that Madison, Onondaga, and Oswego counties lost 2,200 jobs while the state as a whole gained jobs during the year 2013. So aside from giving tax breaks or loans, what are the most important things that local governments like cities and counties can do to help businesses develop and create more jobs?
Well, it's education, and it's making sure that you have an educated workforce. We have a hardworking workforce and has tremendous work ethic. What we're doing in the city level with the city school district is partnering with our light manufacturers and our other business entities who are constantly saying to us, we have openings for people for jobs, but we can't get the right kind of skills, people with these skills. So we're looking to line up our curriculum to make sure that we're giving young people and others the kind of skills and workforce development necessary that the marketplace demands.
Did you have anything you wanted to add?
You're preaching to the choir on some of this economic incentive stuff, because if I was in a classroom right now, if I had the luxury of being a professor like Grant Rear, I would never recommend that we create what we have in terms of all these economic development incentives. I believe, have created an unnecessary mess that does, the criticism is we pick winners and losers, and to some extent, we do. I don't want that to be the case, but the world exists as it exists. Like, I can't, just because I am personally opposed to these, I can't say on behalf of Onondaga County, we're not going to do that. We're going to step back and let the free market play, when Connecticut and Pennsylvania and the states around us, New Jersey, are all giving away all these incentives.
That's exactly what I wanted to follow up with you on, so I'm glad you brought this up. It does seem to me that at some level, in a lot of ways, the education piece aside, that a lot of this is kind of a zero-sum game. And if you're looking at this from the state perspective, it's competing to get a business in place A versus place B, if it's state A versus state B. So it does seem like there's a problem with the philosophy here.
And I think the solution has to come at the federal level. I think if we were to make decisions at the federal level that would make America more competitive, it would be better than pitting communities against each other on the local level or even the statewide level. But I'm playing the hand I've been dealt, and I'm going to compete for jobs for Onondaga County as long as I'm county executive. And we're going to make the decisions based on a return on our investment. And that's the calculation. And I said, we focus our decisions through this prism of what's best for the next generation. We have to have jobs if there's people are going to choose to call Central New York home. If I want my kids to have an opportunity to be here, they have to have a job. And those jobs are coming because we're putting our heads together and we're putting these incentive packages together. And it's worth it to the community, because even if there's public dollars that are being spent to help build the cancer center, those jobs that are coming are people that are going to live in your neighborhood, buy houses, shop in your stores, support the businesses around you that are also creating jobs, because they need to hire more employees because there's more economic activity. So it's not as simple as some people would like it to be, but we have also made it way more complicated than we need to. But it's not something that Stephanie can get on her white horse and say, I'm opposed to all of these, just count Syracuse out. I'm not going to say that on behalf of Onondaga County. So we'll continue to take the criticism that we take and make the decisions the best we can.
You want the last word here?
Yeah, and I think what you've seen us do in the city and also in the county is look at our strengths and align our incentives to our strengths. So we're not out chasing smokestacks. We're saying, here are our areas of real economic viability. They're in radar technology. They're in higher ed. They're in healthcare. And so that we're incenting development that has a great return on investment on those things. We're not out chasing and saying, oh, look, we're going to compete with Pennsylvania for, some retail jobs or the next Walmart or Sam's Club. It's about having a rational basis and saying, for every public dollar of investment in that project, we need to have at least $2 back in terms of return.
That was Joni Mahoney and Stephanie Miner. We'll continue our conversation next week. Mayor Miner and County Executive Mahoney, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.